I learned to say that a little bit differently, because there's an emphasis on some of the words that get left out. And so how I say it is, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs, because it's easy to forget what message we're supposed to be carrying. And it's the one that's in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so when I read the steps, that's how I read them. Before I get into that, though, I really want to thank you guys. This has just been an amazing opportunity, and I'm so humbled and honored that you asked me. And I've really enjoyed seeing all of you. I liked seeing all of you in person better, but this is okay, you know? The Kevin sent, or the Legacy Group sent me a beautiful edible arrangement today. And Jack got to the chocolate covered strawberries before I did. So, you know, we'll discuss that later. you know, it's okay. And so when I was reading and praying about this today, I realized that for me, the 12th step is love in action. You know, because through all of the other steps that came before step 12, you guys taught me how to love. You guys taught me what it was. You guys taught me how to love myself, my fellow alcoholics, and God. And so for me, that's the 12th step is love in action. And, you know, that those aren't my words, they're God's. And there's so much joy in the 12th step of watching people recover. You know, it's a huge gift. And I was thinking about the first few, I don't know, probably the first half dozen women that I sponsored, and I was early in recovery. I was maybe a year or two sober, and I would stalk them. You know, I'd drive by their house to see if they were home. I'd drive by meetings to see if they were going to meetings. And because I felt that I was personally responsible for them. Well, you know, they're not fish, and, you know, I don't need to feed them, or, you know, I don't need to take them for a walk. And so the first few women that I sponsored didn't really stick around very long. And kind of understandable, I think. And so, you know, the thing about sponsorship is a lot of times we grow up with our sponsees. At least that's how it's been for me. All of the women that I sponsor right now, they had other sponsors before me, and they had some time before they came to me. And so we kind of started over from ground zero, because, you know, I don't really know how anybody else sponsors but me. And so I wanted to, you know, the only way in my experience to get to know somebody is to take them through the steps. And that also gives them the opportunity to get to know me. Because this is about a give and take, and it talks a lot about that in the 12 and 12, about the give and take, about how, you know, I share my story, I share my experience, strength, and hope with my protege. They don't call them sponsees, but they do use the word protege. And so for me, you know, the 12th step is the result, you know. The spiritual awakening is the result. And so now I get to take that spiritual awakening and I get to share that with other women. And it's an amazing journey. It talks in the 12 and 12 about how there's such great joy in watching people, you know, they get the glimmer in their eye, and, you know, they start to walk around with their head held high, and, you know, they get a job, and, you know, their relationships are getting better and their lives are getting better. And, you know, how joyful that is for us to have the blessing of being able to watch those things happen and know that I had a tiny little part. Because what I tell them is, you know, my primary job is to guide you through the steps. That's what a sponsor does, is guide you through the steps. And everything else is just kind of, you know, whatever. But in my opinion, kind of everything should be run through the steps. So, you know, it talks a lot about that. Then it talks about, you know, practicing these principles in all my affairs. And that means that, you know, I had to start at home. I had to start with my family. And I had to start with my relationships. And I just really didn't want to do that. I still carried some resentment, I guess, probably against some of my family. And so, you know, I still kind of wanted to punish them a little bit, you know. But the 12 step doesn't allow me to do that. If I'm going to practice these principles in all my affairs, then I have to practice them in all my affairs. And it doesn't say I'm going to get perfect, but what I've learned is that my relationships get better when I get better. And it doesn't really matter if the other person gets better or not, but my relationship still gets better if I do. And that was important for me to remember too. And there's some stuff in the 12 and 12. I want to read it tonight because it just really struck me today in a way that I had not ever seen it before. And it talks about, you know, we were prodded by unreasonable fears and we were nearly perishing in a sea of alcohol. And then it says, but today in well-matured AAs, these distorted drives have been restored to something like their true purpose and direction. We no longer strive to dominate or rule those about us in order to gain self-importance. We no longer seek fame and honor in order to be praised. When by devoted service to family, friends, business, or community, we attract widespread affection and are sometimes singled out for posts of greater responsibility and trust, we try to be humbly grateful and exert ourselves the more in a spirit of love and service. True leadership, we find, depends upon able example and not upon vain displays of power or glory. And still more wonderful is the feeling that we do not have to be specially distinguished among our fellows in order to be useful and profoundly happy. And I like that. I like knowing that I don't have to be above anybody else. I don't have to, you know, rule anybody else. I just get to be the same as everybody else in AA. There's no pecking order. Regardless of what our service positions may be, AA doesn't have a pecking order. We're all the same. And I love that. And it's a very humbling experience to know that I get to be on the same level with everybody else here. You know, some of you have been sober a lot longer than me. Some of you have been sober not as much as me, but we're still on the same journey and we're still at the same level. And that's important. And when I'm working with especially a new woman, that's one of the things, you know, I really try to talk to them about what it was like so that they know that when I came here, I was a complete disaster. You know, I couldn't make a decision. I couldn't figure out what to wear. I didn't have a job. I didn't have any relationships. You know, my language was atrocious. I dressed like, you know, a hooker, and no offense to hookers. And so, you know, they need to know that when I got here, I wasn't who I am now. Because when I first came in, I looked at the women in AA and I thought, you guys can't possibly understand my life because look at you. You know, you're clean and you have husbands and you have nice cars and you have jobs and you have all this stuff and you're happy. And how could you possibly understand me? So the first thing I do is I really like to let them know, you know, where I really came from so that they know that, you know, miracles are possible because if I can get here, anybody can. And for me, the 12 step is about showing other people our miracles so that they can learn how to get their own. And that's, you know, I want to help them save their own life. That's the whole purpose of all of this. That's where we're at. You know, we get to help people save their own lives. And then I'm reading a little farther and it's talking about, you know, practicing the principles in our homes and communities and jobs. And I have to tell you that I really have to practice that a whole lot more because I'm not necessarily successful at it right now, just for a lot of reasons. But that's, again, you know, the word in there is practice. You know, I'm not going to do it perfectly. And so it's practice, but I love how they talk about, especially in the 12 and 12, about how, you know, we're grown ups now. And so that used to terrify me. I didn't want to be a grown up because I knew grown ups had to do stuff like pay their bills on time and, you know, go to work every day on time and do that kind of stuff. And I didn't want to be a grown-up. But the thing about having the responsibilities of a grown-up is you get a lot of freedom too. And I have so much more freedom than I ever had when I drank. You know, freedom to go where I want, whenever I want, with whoever I want. And I don't have to look over my shoulder. Nobody's looking for me. I don't owe anybody any money. You know, I'm not trying to steal anybody's husband. My life is just, it's an open book today. And that's, you know, that's one of the biggest gifts of this. And with the 12th step. And it's funny because none of the women that I sponsor are on here tonight. And I just sent them all a Facebook message. So they're going to know they're in trouble. but actually, it's a really nice day. And if they're outside, that's okay, too. They know how I do 12 step work. I do it with them. The journey through the 12 steps, you know, I didn't know what a spiritual awakening was. I had what I thought were spiritual awakenings before. And even some of the things that we talked about in the 11th step about those, you know, intuitive moments that were maybe a little off base. And it was really my will and not God's. And I thought those were spiritual awakenings. But for me, the true spiritual awakening did not come until I started to carry this message to another alcoholic. Because if I don't do that, if I don't carry this message, I don't grow. And I'm not going to stay sober. You know, it's very clear. You know, nothing will so much ensure immunity against the next drink as intensive work with another alcoholic. And so that doesn't mean, you know, talking to them on the phone once a week or whatever. I have to work intensively with alcoholics. And it's a challenge now for all of us because we have to figure out new ways to do it. There's no face-to-face right now. And, you know, that'll come back eventually. But, you know, so we do a Zoom meeting once a week. The women that I sponsor and some other women, we do a Zoom meeting once a week so I can see their faces because I can talk to them on the phone. I can hear their voices. But sometimes, you know, they're good at hiding things. But if I can see their face, then I know where they're really at because I know them just like they know me, you know, all the way down to the core. And so sometimes I see what's going on with them before they even realize it. And that's, you know, that's part of my job as a sponsor is to, you know, kind of say, hey, you know, maybe you want to take a look at what you're doing here a little bit, you know, and maybe you want to, you know, maybe change some of your behaviors. This has been a huge adjustment for the entire country, you know, the entire world to do things differently. But, you know, the other side of that, I was thinking about what an amazing opportunity we have to be able to go to a meeting and listen to somebody from Australia or Canada or down the street. You know, we have so many more amazing opportunities that we didn't know of before. And so this is such a valuable tool. And I think that this is how a lot of our 12-step work is going to be done, at least for a while, is we're going to do it through here. And I'm working with a couple of the rehabs. I want to set them up with a Zoom meeting as if we were going into the facility. And so they're checking into that. Some of it has to do with, of course, their HIPAA laws and whatever. But, you know, but it's a good opportunity because, you know, we got it. We got to carry this message. We got to carry this message. And it's funny because the guy that lives next door, I've been 12-stepping him through Facebook Messenger for about 2 years. And I came into my office yesterday and there were two state cop cruisers in the driveway. Mm. And it's funny because after they left, he sends me a message because he wants me to know that, like, he's not in trouble. And it's funny how people relate to us. They either are so drawn to us and they don't understand why that they want to be in our orbit, or they are so repulsed by us because we scare them and they don't want anything to do with us. And so that's where he's kind of at, you know, he's kind of in between both of those. Like I want to do this, but I don't really know if I want to do it. So yeah. And it's, you know, 12-stepping through Facebook Messenger. I would have never thought, you know, that you would do that, but you know, it works. It all works. And, so keep my neighbor in your prayers. He's got a couple brothers in the fellowship too. So, he may need a seat here. And I just, you know, I just love that Alcoholics Anonymous gave me a purpose. I did not have a purpose. My life was meaningless basically when I got here. And Alcoholics Anonymous gave me a purpose, and that is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. And so that's, you know, that's what I try to do as often as I can. And I know it's only 6:30, but I love all of you, and I want to thank you all so much for this amazing opportunity. And now I hope you have some questions, because if you don't, you know Kevin will. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Terry.
Thanks, Terry.
So now we'll move on to the question and answer portion of the meeting. Who has a question for Terry? If you do, go ahead and just take yourself off mute and you can speak then.
Hi, Jim, alcoholic.
Hi, Jim.
Hey, Jim.
Hey, thanks, Terry. So let's say someone in the program, or not, and they're maybe thinking about it, and they say, hey, Terry, this step 12, having had a spiritual awakening, what should I expect that to be if I were to have one? What would you answer? How would you answer that?
Wow. Were you working on that question for a while? Because holy cow.
It just popped in my mind a couple seconds ago, just like that.
That's awesome. I think I probably would say, I would say, I think it's different for everybody, but here is my experience of what happened to me, you know, and what happened to me, the spiritual awakening for me came when I truly came for me. You know, they talk about the promises in halfway between the ninth step, you know, they talk about those. That wasn't really a spiritual awakening for me. The true spiritual awakening for me was when I actually started to carry this message to another alcoholic and watched them grow and watched them change and saw them be at perfect peace and ease in the world. And it was just pure love. And I guess, you know, that for me is what a spiritual awakening is. It's pure love for my higher power to me.
Thanks, Terry.
Who's
here
next?
Comes Kevin with a snowboard. Hi, Dave.
Hey.
You have a question?
No, I do have a comment. I want to apologize for being late. I was on the phone with somebody that I'm sponsoring, and it was hard getting off the phone with him because, you know, there's some issues. But, you know, I just want to just make one comment, and it's you know, it says that it had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. And then it carried a message to an alcoholic and practice of principles. You know, I've known you for a long time, Terry, and I see you working with the people at, like, say, down at the club. And, you know, you have to be tough with people because this is life or death. I know it is for me anyways. So I'm just, you know, I see you working and living that step in your life. And, you know, and it's nice to see that work. And like you said, seeing somebody else get it. Well, you got it. And I really appreciate it. I'm sorry I missed what you had there. I'm sure I could get a copy from Kevin, so, because he tapes everything. But yeah, thanks again. I'm going to listen to the questions.
Thank you, Dave. Hi, Jack.
Hi, Terry. Thanks again for a terrific treatment of 12 steps. I just wanted to ask you if you might talk a little bit about, you mentioned these principles, and you mentioned the message, and I wondered if you would just elaborate a little bit on your thoughts on the principles and the message.
Well, as I understand it, the principles are really the 12 steps. And I know that somewhere somebody you know, put out a sheet of paper that step one is whatever it is and step two is whatever it is, you know, one word, and I don't have any idea where that is. I know I have one. But for me, the principles that I'm supposed to be practicing are the 12 steps. And I need to be practicing those in all my affairs with all the people around me. And it's difficult. It's funny because, you know, Susan's on here and she and I are like each other's sounding boards for stuff. And, you know, she'll call up and say, blah, 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 or I'll call up her and say, blah, blah, blah. And the reality is the people that we're usually griping about don't have a program of recovery, and we have to remember that, because we have a program of recovery, and it is vital and crucial for us to practice these principles. People who aren't alcoholics don't have to do the things that we do in order not to die. And so for me, the principles are actually the 12 steps. And so if I'm practicing those principles in all my affairs, I'm probably going to be okay. Thank you.
Who's next?
Yeah, hi, I'm Ryan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Ryan.
Hey, thank you, Terry. As far as, like, when you put a 12-step into action, so say if, just for instance, someone you know comes up to you and they're like, hey, I have a friend, I think he might have a drinking problem. They're not referring to themselves and you don't know this person. What's usually like the first thing you do? Is it a matter of giving that person your number and then they in turn give it to that person? Or do you actively reach out to them before? Because you don't know if they actually do have, you know, an issue, or if possibly it's a beef between those two and they're trying to work something out. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I generally really try not to work with somebody through a mediator. It doesn't work. And it talks about that, you know, in the big book, in how, in not working with others, about how, you know, we shouldn't, you know, if we're going to talk to somebody, we don't talk to them through their wife, you know, we go to them. And I have, and what I have said is, look, you can give this person my number. But if they call me, I will never tell you. So you will never know if they called me or not, because I don't know what your relationship is with that person. And, you know, I've given out my number, I don't know, thousands of times, probably, honestly. And I don't know over the years how many have actually called me. But that's how I work it. If I'm kind of referred to somebody secondhand, I just tell them, look, you know, if they want to call me, that's cool. But, you know, you will never know about it unless they choose to tell you, because this is life and death for them. And, you know, a lot of times they didn't even really want my phone number, or they just, you know, you caught them on a bad day and they said, yeah, you know, I want to quit drinking, I want to do this AA stuff. And, you know, I've had spouses call me and say, hey, you know, I think my wife has a problem. And I say, well, here's my number. Have your wife call me.
Right. Okay.
So, yeah.
Thanks, Terry.
Thank you.
Who else has a question?
I do.
Hi, Anita.
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. Who would
you want? Go ahead, Rena.
Sorry. My question is, could you tell me like the top like five ways that you think it's important for us to carry the message?
Face to face is best. But you know, we have a lot of opportunities. It's face to face. We can do it, you know, over the phone. I don't, I know that, you know, it's difficult to try to get some of the younger women to actually call you, because they text everything, and I don't do text with sponsees until, you know, they've been my sponsee and they've been through the steps, because I can't, I have no no way to relate to what kind of frame of mind they're really in. And texts are very easy to misinterpret. So, you know, for me, it's face-to-face first, the telephone. You know, now we have this. I love going into facilities. I do. I loved going into the detox. I love going into Gateway, Snug Harbor, all of them. I love going in there because you get these women, and I know that it's true for the men's side as well. You get these women, and they don't come to the meetings unless they're hungry. You know, they want this deal. They don't want to go back to jail. And so, you know, there's that. You know, that's service work for me. That, you know, doing that, that's one of my favorite kinds of 12-step work. And I may never see any of the results of it, but I'm still sober. And, you know, so then I can help somebody else. And it talks about that in the book. You know, sometimes you're not going to know who you helped or didn't help. You know, it's just going to just kind of like that. I don't know if I hope. Did that answer it? Okay. Well,
yes. Thank you.
Leslie, did you have a question?
Yes, I did. I wanted to ask you, sorry, I'm Leslie, alcoholic, and I was going to ask you about, you know, when you choose to sponsor someone, is there any indication they give you that they're willing to actually work a program with you? Or, you know, what happens if they don't? Or they're just, you know, you're on board to keep the parole agent off of their butt. And it's, you know, I guess, how do you deal with that? Do you kind of dismiss them? How does that work with you?
Well, I used to sponsor a lot of women out of Community House and House of Healing. I don't really do that too much anymore because 9 times out of 10, they just need a sponsor so that they can say they have a sponsor, and you rarely hear from them. There was, you know, one of the women that I sponsor now, I didn't want to sponsor her at all. I just had a lot of stuff going on in my life, and I didn't want to take on another sponsee. And she came up to me and she said, "Will you be my sponsor?" And I said, "Call me every day for 30 days because I don't dare say no because Beverly will kill me." So I said, "Call me every day for 30 days and then I want you to go around the room and shake everybody's hand." And she did that. And so I had to sponsor her. You know, she didn't even hear the part. She thought that I was her sponsor right out of the gate, which is okay. And she, you know, she does every single thing that I ask her to do to the best of her ability. You know, then I have another one who fights me at every opportunity. You know, everything I suggest that she does, it's, you know, I don't want to do it. She'll do it, you know, but there's always a, you know, I'm dragging her through it. And then, you know, I have another one who just kind of, you know, she just sort of does what I say. But I don't, you know, having been exposed to so many women in early recovery, it's pretty easy for me to spot the con right out of the gate. And I tell them, look, this is the deal. You know, these are the things that we're going to do, and we're going to start doing them right now. And if you want me to sponsor you, that's the way the deal is. You know, we're going to start working the steps. This is what I want you to do. I want you to read this chapter in the big book. I want you to write down any questions. I want you to write down any similarities. I want you to tell me how you relate to this and why you think you're an alcoholic. And so if they do that, that tells me they've at least got a little bit of willingness. And, you know, that's pretty much how I do it in the beginning until, because it also says in the big book, you don't want to rush them, you know, and like some people are all gung ho, oh, I want to come in and I want to do all 12 steps today. And it also says don't rush them, but I need to know that they really understand that, you know, I'm not playing around here. I don't waste my time with people who are not interested. There's plenty of other people out there that, you know, if you just want a sponsor to take you out for lunch, they're out there, you know, but that's not me. So.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Terry. This is Debbie, alcoholic.
Hi, Debbie.
I really need to ask you something, talking about sponsorship. I have one sponsee that calls me faithfully every day. Okay, mm-hmm. No problem there. But I have two other sponsees that are both on, both of them are on step four. They did really good calling me in the beginning, and they were really gung-ho about doing step four. But now that we're going through all this COVID stuff, it's been rough. I don't even hear from them. I've tried calling them, or I'll shoot them a text. Hey, I'm really wondering how you're doing. You know, how about a phone call? How about something? But it's like, do I even bother? I mean, I'm talking a couple months now, and I want to help them. I mean, I really need to help them because I know it's going to help me, but I don't want to push them either. So what would you do? I mean, well, I don't hear from them. If I'm lucky, maybe once every 2 weeks.
Well, you know, I talked to Beverly about that, and I said, what do I do if I don't hear from them? And she said, you give them one courtesy call after 2 weeks. That's what you do. And if you don't hear from them after that courtesy call, then you're probably not their sponsor, because, you know, it's a give and take relationship. But the other thing I do is if I've got people on a four step, I say, you got 2 weeks to do this, or whatever the time frame is that works for you and the spot, you know, if they work a lot of hours or whatever, but I say, all right, you got 2 weeks to do this. Because if you're walking around with a four step, you're walking around with your guts hanging out, bleeding, and it's painful, you know, it's really easy to get off track if somebody doesn't say, hey, you know what, we need to get through the rest of these steps here. But I've been in that position with a lot of girls, and it breaks my heart, because by the time I get to doing if somebody's doing a four step with me, I've already fallen in love with them. You know what I mean? They're already part of my family, and you know, they don't know that, because you still have to keep a distance, I believe, at least in the beginning, because they need to learn boundaries, and it's our job to teach them that. But I've already, by the time we get to the fourth step, I've already fallen in love with them, or I wouldn't take the time that I take with them. So it's difficult, and it's heartbreaking sometimes working with new people. It is. But after you do it for a period of time, it's just kind of like, okay, next. And that sounds cold, but it's facts out of our experience that that's how it goes. But the other thing is, you can pray for them. You know, prayer is pretty powerful.
That I do.
Good girl.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Anybody else?
Nice cat.
I'm on a countdown. 9, 8. All right, well, I'll try to break the ice here. Hi, everybody. My name's Kevin. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Kevin.
Kevin.
You know, when I get a chance, when I scan all the prospective speakers for this meeting, someone described you as the service queen, which to me is an extreme compliment, because when I first got sober, anybody who asked me to do anything, I thought it was great, because nobody was asking me to do anything, because that's just how unreliable I was. So being the service queen, which is not a bad reputation to have, I'm probably sure you had other things that were worse than the service queen. When you're sponsoring people, you know, I do you... how do you suggest service to them?
You know, it's funny, because I was thinking about how Beverly didn't really give me a choice. She just kind of said, this is what you're going to do. And, you know, something that we almost never have the opportunity to do anymore is actual 12-step calls. you know, she would come and get me at 3 a.m. and say, we're going on the 12 step call. And sometimes they wouldn't even answer the door. You know, sometimes we, you know what, I mean, we had to call the paramedics one time, a woman was going into convulsions and so, you know, so I got to see that, you know, I got to see 12 step work in action right out of the gate. And one of the things that she said was, you know, we owe Alcoholics Anonymous everything about our lives. So we have to give it back. We have to. And I have to tell you that Service Queen is probably the nicest thing that I've been called in AA, because I have a lot of other names that are not that nice. But it's important to me. And people say, well, you know, I do this because I want to stay sober. You know, I'm not doing this because I want to control anything. I want to stay sober. And I know that if I'm in the, you know, Jim P says all the time, I stay in the middle. So I stay in the middle because I want to stay here. And so, yeah, I do a lot of service work, and I always have. But it doesn't, you know, service work feels like it doesn't really suit how I feel about it. It's just like part of who I am, I guess. It's not work. It's an honor and a privilege to do anything for Alcoholics Anonymous. So for me, it doesn't feel like work. But every woman that I sponsor absolutely knows that if I hear at all that they've said no to anything, they're not going to like it. And they understand that, and they do service work. You know, the other thing we used to have to do is we washed ashtrays. You know, we washed ashtrays, we washed coffee cups, we swept floors. That, you know, we don't have to do any of that anymore. And so those little things were very important to me, because it gave me an opportunity to kind of like look up at people without them really looking at me. So I kind of figured out the faces that went with the shoes. So I kind of knew who was coming in the room by that. And so I try to give them little service work to do at first, just to kind of build up their confidence, you know, go and clean up the coffee pot in the kitchen, or, you know, go put these books away or whatever. Because we need to feel like we belong, you know, and if we're doing service work, we belong. I think that's it.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
Hey.
Yeah. Hey, I got one more. All one right. more. Jim. Okay. Jim, alcoholic.
Hi, Jim. So,
Terry, how adamant are you with your sponsees when they've completed the steps that they begin to sponsor other women?
They know that they must do that. And it's difficult right now because just because of where all three of them are in their recovery, none of them are sponsoring anybody right now. Well, they have people that say they're their sponsors, but they never call them. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, oh, you know, rehab people. And so none of them are sponsoring anybody right now. Generally they do. And I tell them, you know, you got to do this because I'm not going to be around forever. And this is you guys' responsibility to make sure that the doors stay open for Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you don't practice doing it right now, how are you going to know how to do it? You know? And they say, well, you know, I'm not very good at it. Well, neither was I at first. There's probably a lot of questions of whether I'm any good at it or not now, depending on which day you catch any one of my sponsees, you know? But yeah, they got to do this. They got to carry this message, and it's as much for them as it is for the sponsee.
Thank you.
Terry, I have one more question, Debbie okay. Alcoholic. Okay. I can see doing step 1, 2, and 3 over the phone, because mm-hmm. I'm going through my steps all over again. And Marilyn did that with me over the phone, talking. But now step 4 is a totally different situation.
Mm-hmm.
So what, say one of them called me and said, okay, I'm ready, I did step 4. What do you recommend I do? Because I know you need to be face to face.
Well, looking at this present situation, I would say I'd like to do a fifth step with somebody. First of all, when it gets to the sixth step, it says, when we got home, you know, when we got back home, you know, we take down the book from the shelf. So that implies that I went somewhere to do my fifth step. So I like to take them somewhere, you know, to the beach or wherever it is. They can meet you somewhere and you can do socially distancing, you know. And but for me, the other thing is I feel like being out in nature allows us both to get closer to our higher powers. And so that's what you can do it, you know.
That's a wonderful idea. Thank you.
Sure. Hi, Melissa.
I have a question for you. I'm in LA. I didn't get sober here. I got sober in the treatment center of the world in Minnesota, way back when. And the old timers were all worried. And what they worried about's come true. They're recruiting people in LA out of our AA meetings for their treatment centers. So we get no newcomers to work with fresh. And then, oddly enough, I keep in touch with, I've had many sponsors. I moved around the country and around the world, lots. So I have a sponsor that knew me, well, 34 years ago, because that's how old my son is. She knew me when I was pregnant with him in Arizona. She's 86, 88, something like that. And she knew Ruth, who was the original member, you know, all that stuff. So, and she says, well, I don't sponsor that many people anymore, Melissa, because treatment center says you have to ask them how many people they're sponsoring. And if they're not sponsoring a lot, they're no good. And she says, and I'm sort of old now. I can only do one or two. I go 86 and 88 and physically handicapped. That's what she's saying. I'm going, oh, Phyllis, you can still sponsor me because God knows I can need it. And I call her, especially now with the COVID, I call her once a week. And so I'm perplexed. It's like, it doing the inventory on somebody's worksheets is not doing the program. And I don't get it. It's like, huh? And if I don't give them a worksheet to do, then they don't think it's real. So I go, oh, okay, well, I'll look at Joe and Charlie stuff. But you know, I had problems with Joe and Charlie when I was getting sober. So it's like, you know, I don't, so I twirl. And today, because I'm pretty sane today, even in spite of all of this stuff, people are calling me. And I go, oh, well, you might think about this. Well, I have a sponsor. And I go, fine. I don't need, personally, I don't need to sponsor anybody out of ego. I don't need to do that. But I do want to be visible as a resource for long-term sobriety and what the program really means. And I end up just staying open and available, but I'm not politically correct if there is a thing of that in AA. I can't believe there is, but there, it feels like that. And I go, they scoop up the girls because it's money. I understand that. And when they run out of the insurance, they'll dump them. And I don't know how to, that's all the politics, you know, and I know it helps girls get, you know, sober sooner, I think. So I'm always sort of twirling with all of that. And I just go, oh, just pray, let it go, and be present. When somebody's there, they will come and you can work with them. And I always read the big book with them. And we talk about the big book. And I say, what do you highlight this? Write this down, you know, and we'll go back over it. But then they go to somebody who's got a worksheet. because it's hard reading the big book in that. And the worksheets are, I don't know. I just got discouraged again. I've got a gal now who her treatment owner doesn't want to sponsor her anymore. So it's got dumped to me. And I'm going, she's, you know, calling me at different times of the day or whatever. You know, life is so busy. I don't have time to make an appointment regularly. And I just go, I'm going to let it go, because basically if she can't even make a commitment to get in touch either this time or that time, then how serious is that person? And then I go, love them anyway. Who knows? They may come back, you know, stumble back. But it's a long talk to you, but have you experienced this, or is this just unique to where I've landed again in the States? And, you know, I don't know what to do with it all.
Well, I actually happen to be treatment facilities coordinator for our central committee. So I interact on some level with all of the heads of the treatment facilities. And so some of them are very open to letting us come into their facilities and do meetings and, you know, sponsor women and take them out to meetings and do those things. But one of the first things that I tell the women that are in rehab is this ain't recovery. Recovery starts when you're out of here, and then we're going to do the real deal. So if you think anything you learned here, basically we have to deprogram them, you know, because it's all about keeping your feet flat on the floor and making sure your penmanship is neat and all this crap that they don't need in life. You know, they need to know how not to drink. And that's what I can show them. That's what I can show them. It's unfortunate here. There's a lot of rehabs around here too. That's why we don't do 12-step calls anymore, you know, because there's all kinds of rehabs. There's one a mile down the road from my house. They keep emailing our website, which I also manage the website. They keep emailing the website saying, hey, we have beds available. Well, that's nice. You know, but I don't need one. It's tough. And the other thing is, and I see, I'm quite direct. People use other words for that, which is okay. But I don't mess around with this. And, you know, this whole, well, we're going to hurt their feelings. Well, I don't care. I really would like them not to die. So I don't care if their feelings get hurt, you know? So if I don't do it the way that your rehab people taught you, well, I've been doing this for a while longer than they have, and they learned it out of a book. So, you know, what do you want? You want what I have, or do you want what they have? But yeah, there's, you know, a lot of rehab facilities around here, and then they send them to the halfway house, and then they send them to the three-quarter way house. And by the time they get out of there, they have an apartment and a job and a car and money and no recovery and nowhere to know how to get it. So it is, it's very frustrating, very frustrating. So we just do what we do, you know, we do what we can.
Hey, Greg.
All set? Wow. All right. Thank you, Terry.
What time does this meeting start?
6.
6 o'clock.
6 o'clock.
My paper has 6:30.
Oh, you need a new
paper.
That's why
I was so late. Sorry.
Okay. All right.
Well, I'm glad you're here anyway.
We love to see
you. Well, Terry, I know that we all appreciate all the effort and the time that you've put into sharing your experience with the 12 steps with us over the last several weeks. And, you know, it's been great getting to know you. We all appreciate having been able to benefit from this so much. Thank you.
I'll tell you what, I had some really mixed feelings this morning, because the one hand was like, oh, cool, I'm done after tonight. And then it's like, oh, I'm done after tonight. So again, it's really, thank you for helping me enlarge my spiritual life through this journey.
All right. All right, Jerry. Thank you.
Well, next week, we're all invited back. We met them before the meeting started. Dan is going to be starting on the 12 steps for us. He'll be covering steps 1, 2, and 3 for us next week. So make sure you tune in for Kevin's new favorite speaker.
I'm looking forward to it, Dan.
Yeah.
And Terry, I'd like to say, you guys can run away.
Wait, like, yeah. Somebody, who's talking? Somebody else is talking.
That was me.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. I just wanted to say, Terry, I wish I would have started it from day one, you doing all the step work. I didn't really ever get to know you well. And I'll tell you what, you have so much insight, and I've really enjoyed listening to you, and you've taught me a lot. So I want to thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
So we've run a little bit over, but does anybody have any announcements that they need to share before we wrap it up?
Herbie, I'm Dan Alcoholic. I don't know if you guys heard about Tracy passing away. Tracy Trent.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you keep him and his family in your prayers, just heard about it yesterday. So, he was a guy who I would go to every Monday night to the big book meeting with the last, probably last 5 years since he got it sober. Mm-hmm. So, he's going to be a loss.
Yeah.
Thanks, Dan.
And Jack, I just heard about your brother. My condolences. Thanks, Jerry.
And I just want to remind everybody that if you want a copy of Terry's series, they're available, and somehow I'll get everybody a list of all the past speakers too. So make available all this, because it's a really good resource, right? And thanks, Dan. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
All right. Well, we can go ahead and conclude then with the Serenity Prayer. Terry, if you want to take us out.
Okay. God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen.